Please enjoy this ringback tone while your podcast is reached.
This is Raquel and Chelsea, and you're listening to Baroque Bitches.
Welcome to Baroque Bitches, your art and art history gossip podcast. I'm Raquel.
I'm Chelsea.
And we are so excited to welcome you all back to another week of your favorite down and dirty details of
finally
all these fucking beloved artists. And let's be warned, though, you might change your mind by the end of every episode.
Especially this one.
Especially this one. Sorry.
This one specifically.
This one's a rough one. We had a great week last week. We even got featured on a podcast radio. It's online radio, but still.
In London. Radio.
In London.
Thank you.
Crikey.
No.
Which is so cool. We were so stoked. But yeah, so it was a good week for us. This week we're so excited because we're welcoming a third. We're becoming a thruple this week. This lady, Chelsea, and myself go way
legendary,
way back to the early days of art school together at Sonoma State.
09?
I think 09. Well, I mean, we went there in 07.
10.
Well, there were many, many a late night in art studio slaving away over prints, paintings, drawings, and lots of conversations of like, what does it all mean? And pining after the wrong dudes and crying over crits and wasting way too many efforts to win over the opinions of white male dominated faculty, ruining our eardrums at music shows. And partying our asses off, and those were the days.
Oh, yeah.
Right, ladies?
Oh yeah.
Well, those were in fact the days.
Let's go back.
I'm good. I like it here now. Well, your many, many talents: printmaker, painter, muralist, communicator, and chef extraordinaire for a major restaurant in San Francisco. I mean, look how far you've come. So, lady, please tell the Baroque Bees what they really want to know. Who are you?
Who am I? You know, I ask myself this question all the time. My name is Angela Dela Cruz. I am a printmaker and a chef, and I am based out of San Francisco, California, and it has been my privilege to spend my adult formative years with these two Baroque-ass bitches. I feel like weird trying to tell people about my life because you guys know everything.
Okay, so just pretend we just met and you have 10 seconds to tell everybody.
Okay.
And you'll make die. Me fall in love with you.
Yeah. And they have to fall in love with you. Okay, go.
10 seconds about me. I am a lover, not a fighter. And I think art is so important because it helps us understand the world that we live in, even if you're like, oh no, I don't want to understand this. This is actually terrible, which I think is what we might be talking about today. I really like process-based sort of artwork, and I think that's why I gravitate towards working in a kitchen. It's all very similar printmaking, but with food.
Right. Because I mean, food, there's definitely like, it's an art form in itself. I mean, we've all seen any fucking big show now or movie always has like aerial shots of food because food is
very
so
pornographic.
Like, yeah, it's so beautiful now.
Art, it's all a reflection of that. Everyone's just trying to like cook like their mom did for them when they were a kid, when everything was simple and safe.
But make it like high art.
Yeah. Like make it pretty because we eat with our eyes first. That's what like all of your chefs will ever tell you.
But the chef world is also super male dominated. Do you feel that it's similar to the art world in that way?
Oh yeah.
It's like
definitely. It's a boys club for sure. I felt that way a lot at school, having been taught by mostly men, where
right
to be a player in this game and be a woman is really exciting because they have an expectation of this hyper-masculine shit. And I'm just not like that. And
I think too, that like any person that's listening right now that has worked in a restaurant, go back to when you had to go to the back of house and how fucking intense that energy is. Yeah. And people are yelling.
Yeah,
guys are ready to fight each other. This guy's about to punch this waiter. And I'm just
I just need ice, you guys. I'm sorry. I'm just trying to get through, man. I'm sorry. And being a woman in that world, like, you really do have to sort of, for lack of a better word, manipulate the entire world around you. Like,
definitely.
Call on the parts of yourself that are like hot female when you need to, but then you also cater to that like masculine energy when you need to, and like be a guy's girl when you have to. And it's like a really weird sort of game you have to play to even.
You're always having to overcompensate all the time. This guy does this at this speed, I know that I gotta do this 100 times better and faster and with a better presentation because I have to show myself and prove myself.
Oh, totally. I never thought of myself as like a competitive person. And then I stepped into this environment where, I mean, it's kind of like cutthroat naturally. When you get into this environment and you're next to people who are better or like can do things in a way that you just don't know how, you end up like, you want to be just as good as they are. And so like you commiserate with your people and they know how bad it can get, but they're also like they're also trying to get into the same positions, into the same kind of acclaim that you also want. But at the end of the day, it's just food.
Right.
But being able to compete against yourself, like I think, especially as a woman, you're like, that keeps your head on straight. Cause
right.
There's days where like you want to cry and everyone around you is totally fine, but inside you're like, I'm flaking.
Well, and that's, and as a woman, I don't feel like less strong because I cry. If anything, I feel stronger when I cry because I like get that shit out.
Yeah, absolutely.
So have you seen The Bear?
I have. And
is that what it's like?
Is that accurate
for you? Is that accurate for you?
I'd say like they did a pretty good job of like the show's very coded. There's definitely things that I'm like, oh, that's an inside joke meant for just me to understand. But then I was also like, who the fuck puts that much stock on the top shelf and expects this little motherfucker to grab all that stuff? That's just bad chefing. Nobody would do that. But I think it's cool that this like secret world is kind of being exposed in a way, because it demystifies it a little bit. Cause there is definitely like a have and having not. Like if you work, there's oftentimes you work at a restaurant that your family could never eat at, or that you personally are like, yeah, I can afford this, but would I be able to pay rent if I got a wine pairing? I don't know.
Right. Yeah. And that's something that crosses my mind all the time, is like these restaurants are so fancy and the way that they're staffed in the back is not a reflection of how expensive they are whatsoever. Because you kind of assume,
they couldn't be.
And you kind of assume that like chefs are well off, but they're really not, unless they have some other sort of thing going on, like books, shows, other, and they're supplementing in some way. Or is that wrong? Because that's what
That's absolutely. It's kind of like, you know, in art school, they tell you like, oh, yeah, you can be a full time artist, but you have to have a day job, too.
Right.
It's kind of one of those things that like we support ourselves, but your whole life is spent in the same place. It's just like I can't remember when I decided I wanted to monetize my hobby. It feels like stepping from being in art school and going into a cooking position, being a chef, like it felt like a natural like progression, even though it was like switching mediums, like, oh, I'm not a printmaker anymore, or I printmake but I don't use ink anymore, I'm using like lettuce.
Well, I think it's so fucking cool. I mean, you're really underselling yourself. I mean, Itria has been in like art, like articles, SF Weekly. Like, what are the, I mean, there's a ton of different accolades. And even before that, you were looking at Al's Place, and that was like another really well reputed.
Oh, yeah.
Got quail eggs stuff. And.
Yeah, Michelin, the Michelin fucking star restaurant.
Michelin.
Oh my. I think Michelin star and like, working where I work now, where we don't have a star, but we have been, where I would consider ourselves like a neighborhood restaurant where right. we have a shit ton of regulars and people will come and eat at the restaurant like 3 times a week because they're like neuro spicy and they're like, I can only eat this same pasta for 3 days in a row because this makes me feel joy, you know.
Oh,
versus
I love
like,
them.
And it was amazing.
I relate to that so hard.
Yeah, you see this person, they're like, oh, the Cincioni homie's here again. It's like, oh yeah, send them something to eat with their pasta because they're there. Whereas like, you know, working for a Michelin star, sometimes people are like saving up their whole paycheck just to eat at this one restaurant, which is like. Right. There is definitely a level of like exclusion that happens. And I always kind of like thought about it in terms of like, you know, in the art world, there's like the academy
right.
of white dudes who like rule this, the secret underground of like selling your artwork.
Yeah.
And then there's
the
like,
Earth Lords.
There's like Underworld. More of like food for the people idea. I like being more in a restaurant that's like more accessible. Not to say that our food isn't on par with Michelin standards, because it definitely we were Michelin rated, so like we're in the guide as like a place to check out, but we're not like on the guide, you know. We get like, I'm right. gonna call it honorable mention because that's kind of what it felt like.
Well, and it just feels like once you're on it, it's like, okay, how do we get on it again? Like, it's just a never ending sort of battle. And then, I mean, if there's anything we learn from the Bear, there's like a certain level of caliber that those restaurants
have to
maintain, which are like unsustainable. It seems like it's just, and you're, and like your family and like your roots, food and togetherness, it like speaks more to like what you grew up with working where you do
yeah.
now.
I think that the coolest part about working in the industry is getting to flex like the hospitality part of what my upbringing. Like, I feel like I've thought about it a lot, and being Filipino, it implies hospitality. Like, it's a part of our culture. It's a part of like our ethos as a culture where we want people to be brought together. We're raised in like giant environments with our whole family present, and like the meal is kind of like the center piece of everything. And, you know, I think of all the times my family and I came together when there was people not fucking with each other, people that were not happy with each other, but they put up and shut up to sit down around a table, had some food, got drunk enough to talk shit, and then they left and they were going to do it all over again for the next important event. And I think that like hospitality for me, that's how it is. It's like when you're here, you're family. I hate to like Olive Garden it.
But yeah, dude. But also, side note, so... I don't care who you are. You will not eat as much as you will at a Filipino family's barbecue. I don't care what you say. If you
leave hungry, you were probably asleep.
So, like.
Full. Well, dude, thanks for indulging us with your background. I like, just look at us. Could you believe it?
I know.
Look at us.
We made it to 35.
Who would have thought?
I got my
Not
job.
Me. All right.
We can keep going.
Well, are we ready?
So ready.
Visualize.
Yes. Let's go.
We're all ready. Right.
Do it.
Okay. Another fucking day. Pigo! Come here, you mangy fucking mutt! Where the fuck are my clogs? Let's take a little walk. You're the only one I need in this fucking world. Though I must say, my 5 prior wives did try. You see, the thing is, they all just get older. And then what am I to do, dear boy? I stay the same age. Besides, I'm not one to be tied down. They all do not understand me fully. I am unbridled. I'm a virile, primitive man. I need to unleash the wild beast that is within me. And one little commitment of the mouth is just an impediment to a life worth living that a man really wants. I was made to conquer uncharted lands. And by consequence of that, uncharted women. To be the first to step into an untamed forest bound with adventure. I am a primal being, after all. And no place or person will ever tie me down. I've got too much shit to see. And too much to conquest. So welcome to Paul Gauguin. Love him, fuck him, and leave him.
Oh my god.
Let's do this.
I'm already getting like sick.
Oh my god, he's so gross. It was really hard for me to do. Well, don't worry because he gets his.
Okay, good.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it goes unsaid. This guy like he's notorious. People just like know he's a shitty dude. And there's a lot of fucking tea. And I'm pretty much just realizing that all impressionist painters led like really fucking wild lives.
Yeah. Gossip, tea. They're just
drugs, French. Alcohol, fucking. They're pretty much all French. And their lives make our 20s just look tame by way of comparison, like way fucking tame.
I know. And we didn't have, I mean, we party, but we didn't have all the hookers. Maybe we should have.
We should have.
Maybe we should
have. Let's go to Amsterdam.
Reverse the male gaze. Yeah, they're just, yeah, I mean. Well, so there are some different rumors, though, about him to clarify. And we have multiple incidences of almost dying, many, many, many women, rowdy brawls, other famous people, wanderlusty soul that cannot seem to find the right balance to live. But he also can never find the perfect vagina and substance abuse issues.
Yay.
So we're going to cover it all like quite today. Oh my God.
My boyfriend.
Yeah. I mean, and I know you guys already kind of know some stuff about him, but first impression, what do you got? What do you think?
I know a little bit about the dude. I know there's drama with Polynesia, definitely. That there's something going on there.
Definitely
that is,
some drama
is
with Polynesia.
Probably pretty fucking toxic. I'm gonna assume just from looking at the paintings. And I've heard people in museums be like, why? Okay. So this guy's French, right? Well, why? What's going on here then?
I think the first time I ever saw his work, I was like flabbergasted. I was like, why do these look so weird? I was like, oh. Because they look like me.
Aww.
And it felt good to be the representation, but I was just like, oh,
the object of men's desire.
Sinister. Yes. Like, how old are these girls? Yeah.
They don't look old enough.
They don't look old enough to be hanging out with this gross white guy.
They don't look like they're totally developed, possibly.
Mm. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Let's get into and some brush context. And brush strokes and blah, blah, blah.
Who is he? Where, what, why?
ASL. So we're heading to mid-19th century France to start our story in what place other than Paris? So,
of course,
it's 1848 and big year for France. I'm going to test your French trivia. So any guesses what happened in France in 1848?
France. Like the Industrial Revolution.
The French Revolution.
French Revolution.
Oh! Yeah.
Close. You had revolution. Yeah, so they accomplished universal male suffrage, leading into the first election of France's first president, Napoleon Bonaparte. So, or Bonaparte. Bonaparte, right? I don't know.
I'll allow it. I'll take that.
So we also around this time simultaneously have the gold rush happening. The safety pin and the first dishwasher were both invented.
Oh, my God. What times.
Dishwasher.
Revolutions.
I want one.
Revolutions are kind of just happening all over the world. Lots of colonization. Boo. And boo. still no cure for syphilis. So foreshadowing.
Ouch.
And life in general was still a lot of just like really fucking poor people, some middle class people, and like rich, like a small percentage of rich upper elite fuck faces.
The powdered wig people.
Kind of like today. So mommy is Aline Maria Chazal. And right off the bat with the tea in the family history. So mom's mom, a.k.a. Polly's grandma, is a total fucking badass. Flora Tristan.
Yeah, tell me.
So she is a pre-socialist, pre-feminist leader. Mm. And they're descendants on the side of like a bougie-ass background. So they have roots in Peru in like upper elite political influential family. That is also linked to the Borgias. The Borgias, that incesty, cruel, disgusting family.
Okay.
If you don't know about that, sorry, spoiler alert. Well, even though there is Peruvian roots, Aline is born in Paris, and that's his mom. And somewhere along the line in Aline's childhood, her dad was like sexually abusing her.
Okay. Oh, no.
I know. Oh. And, like, fucking horrible, right?
Yeah. It starts already.
Already. Runs in the family.
Oh, no.
And her mom is not only, like, not on my fucking watch, you disgusting piece of shit, but also you will pay for this. So she presses charges against him. And he attempts to murder her.
What?
But the word attempts in there, he's unsuccessful. He's then sentenced to 20 years of servitude after that. So, yeah. Tea right off the bat. Drama, man. Drama, oof. Drama.
Grandma.
Grandma. Grandpa. More like it. Because that would have been his grandpa. Gross. So.
Yeah, that's gross.
So, but this really sets the tone for our story. Because the women in Paul's life are strong. And they do not take pity on themselves. And they do not take pity on others. And the men in his life are disgusting. So.
Ooh, yes.
Except, I mean, so let's talk about dad. Well, daddy is Clovis Gauguin Sr. And dad was a journalist and a highly radical one.
Oh.
He's not for the old ways. He's not necessarily for the new ways. He's more like a Bernie Sanders.
Okay.
so radical for the time, right?
Yeah.
So mom and dad meet Mary, whatever. They have daughter Marie Gauguin. And then on June 7th, 1848, Eugene Henri Paul Gauguin is born in Paris, France. And I'm sorry, I did listen to pronunciation videos, but French is too fucking hard, okay? I'm sorry. So he's a flippy floppy back and forth, up and down, all around Gemini. And I realize some of our listeners, this might mean nothing to you. So I thought it would be fun to reference our favorite resource for this stuff. Cosmopolitan. So Gemini traits are super fast, super smart, super adaptable, and super curious people. All of this superness makes them fascinating to be around, albeit usually only for short spells, because they can A, wear you out, and B, get easily distracted elsewhere, and before you know it, they're off.
Bye.
Gemini's like variety, keeping their options open, having lots of opportunities on the go, and being in the know about anything and everything and everyone. Notorious gossips, they're generally kind, but there is a slither of chilliness and detachment.
Sounds about right.
Well, let me tell you, dear Baroque BBs, this one rings very true for our Polly boy. So Paul is born and their family is well-educated, upper middle class-ish, and things are good, right? Well, then 1848 hits, and along with it, the French Revolution. And this causes an issue for our politically vocal and arguably volatile Clovis Gauguin. And things get too hot and the family has to flee and go to Peru. Back to mom's roots where she
Oh, Peru. That's right awesome.
Paul the baby, they go on this long fucking ship trip because there's no planes back then. And they're on a fucking boat. And Clovis has a heart attack situation dies.
So, oh, my God.
Yeah, so leaves mom, Aline, widowed with two kids. Not ideal. Not ideal.
Dang. Nope.
So they make it to Lima, Peru, and house up with her uncle, Don Pio. And Don Pio would have been great-great-uncle of the Viceroy family, which is related to the Borgias. And so they're living – the point is that they're living in a nice, like, palace-esque sort of home.
Fine. Yeah. Daddy's dead, but that's fine.
Daddy's dead, but
– they're on money, so it's fine.
We're in a palace.
Daddy wasn't dead.
So they're surrounded by a vibrant life in the capital city, and Paul fucking loves living in Peru. I mean, he was born in Paris, but he doesn't fucking know any better, right?
Yeah.
And he doesn't even speak French. He grows up speaking Peruvian Spanish. And Lima had
interesting.
Yeah, right. And Lima had been colonized, but still, like a lot of places, even now, had a mixture of like native customs and traditions mixed in with like European shit. So some of his earliest memories were of his mom in traditional Lima dress, which was a cover from head to toe that would just leave a little peeping eye peeking out.
That's
kind of hot though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have, like that sort of
anonymity. What a tease.
I know. And so these women were called tapados limenas, and a veil that was specific to Lima called a manto, and it was the veil that they wear, and a saya was the skirt, and it would cover the whole face, the body, and everything would be covered with the exception of one eye looking out. So a woman could like see her husband in the street and he wouldn't recognize her, and you know, then she could go meet like another dude and like flirt with him.
Yeah.
So like the thought is that like, this kind of sense of anonymity gives like a power back to the female because they can be whoever they want to be, sort of deal. And I'm sure it drove dudes just fucking wild.
Sounds accurate.
And from like this westernized point of view, it could kind of be looked at as like subservient. Which, spoiler alert, Polly is, like, really into. So he's, like, jizzing all over ancient art, too. His mom.
Jizzing on ancient art.
His mom would collect ink and pots and sculptures. And it's thought that life in Peru really inspires this sort of sense of adventure in Paul and love for like uncharted lands that he never loses. And I think like a lot of dudes just like to pee outside and shit in the woods or something. There's like something about that. Like he's totally on board with that. I want to be outside. I want to be shitting in the woods. That's his jam. He wants to live in the elements, but like comfortably. And
me too.
Yeah.
So yeah, so they are living very comfortably. And Aline's not like a helpless sort of lady. She's working as a seamstress. She gets a rich ass fucking boyfriend. But things start heating up again politically in Peru. And when her uncle dies, and they have to get the fuck out and go back to Paris. So they go to Paris and then they go to Orléans. And at this age, Paul is really not into France. I mean, he doesn't speak the language. And to make matters worse, mom, like much of these artists' parents, sends him to a fucking Catholic boarding school. Go be somebody else's problem. Get the fuck off.
Jesus, here you go.
And so he fucking hates it. They're praying morning, noon, and night, learning the Bible stories and how terrible he is, you know, of a person. And repent, 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 sin, 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 burn, 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 blah,
burn.
Blah, blah.
Burn, 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 burn,
So, which we can all identify with, right? We're all have that Catholic root. But these stories leak into the art later on, so it is important. And he can't wait to get the fuck out. So when he turns 17, he joins the Merchant Marines, which is basically like the Navy.
Nice.
And he takes his first trip to Brazil.
Oh.
And right off the bat, we get a sense of who this guy is in his letters to his friends, telling them basically, everybody fucking loves me here. These ladies do not stop throwing themselves at me.
Yeah,
I have
bitches are hot
so
here.
Many ladies. And he boasts about fucking everything that he can get his hands on, including like a famous British actress and also a, quote, fat Prussian passenger that the captain was in quest for, too.
No. But
apparently she ends up choosing Polly Boy. And, yeah, so I do think that he loved thick bitches. Like, just, you know, side note.
Okay.
But
who doesn't?
Yeah, not, for real.
Really.
Come on.
Really look down, look deep down inside yourself and don't say that you like fat bitches.
You would be lying.
Lying.
You would be lying.
They're lying.
You're a liar.
So things are good for Paul and his penis, but then when he gets out, somewhere when he's in the Caribbean, that his mom died.
Oh, mom.
Oh no.
I know.
No.
R.I.P. Aline. So this was really hard for him. Like, he loved his mom. Even though she wasn't the warmest, even though she'd like fucking hit him sometimes.
And sent him to boarding school.
It was because she had to, apparently, send him to boarding school. A quote unquote, she had to hit him.
Okay.
Quote, so he decides to move back to Paris and, with the help of mom's rich ass boyfriend, gets a job in the French Stock Exchange.
No.
Yeah, and he's like on Wall Street. Like, he's fucking
business.
Killing it.
Business.
Projections.
Business.
Third quarter. Circle back.
Cycle back. Cycle back. Back.
Circle back.
Projections.
Oh my God. Projections.
So he's killing it. And he's like really coming up hard. And this sets the perfect stage for him to meet his first wife, Sophie Met. Gad, a Danish hottie with a body.
Mm.
He's a super fun party girl, a total Tara Reid, loves smoking cigars, dancing, music, and drinking.
Oh my gosh, she'd be a baroque bitch.
Yeah, she sounds fun.
except not. And I'll tell you why in a minute. So they rush into getting married and they have kids right away. And Polly is still working for the stock market, popping out kids. Left and right.
Pop, pop, pop.
But something is still missing for Paul. And he's living in the ninth arrondissement.
Arrondissement.
I do know that Paris is like a cinnamon roll, so it's like the ninth section of the cinnamon roll.
The ninth cinnamon roll.
Where he's living, businessmen and bohemians are like commingling, working side by side. So he very much would have been like exposed to artists and other, you know, and been like, wow, they look like they're having so much fun.
They're so cool.
And
he's amongst his peers.
He starts making art, and Met at first is like, all right, cool. I don't get it. But I have this like hot money-making businessman husband who, instead of going out and getting wasted and hookering, just likes to make like weird paintings and sculptures and shit. That's fine. But then a few things happen. So the stock market crashes. Oh, no. And Gauguin's, they're all forced to move to this, like, new, less nice, sort of shitty, sad neighborhood where they live across the street from Camille Pizarro. And a huge fucking bromance ensues between Paul and Camille. And Camille, if you don't know, is a neo-impressionist painter, which basically just means, like, one of the first, like, the pre, like, he was the guy. And we've talked about impressionism a few times, but as a reminder, impressionism is basically lots of paintings of everyday life and of outdoor stuff with little tiny brush strokes that represent the impression of the light that's left on an image. Right? Did I miss anything?
The interpretation of the subject, not the copy of the subject.
Thank you. And Camille Pizarro is like a big fucking deal. He was the only impressionist painter to be in all 8 impressionist exhibitions in Paris. And like kind of big deal. And Gauguin's fucking like loving this guy.
This guy with this long beard. I just like the beard.
Yeah, he did have a long beard. And so Paul is less and less interested in this sort of more refined upper middle class gentleman sort of life and more interested in becoming a weirdo, funkadelic, artsy, bohemian dude. Mm. And when his 5th child is born, instead of putting stockbroker on the birth certificate, he puts artist. Yeah, and this
whole
story, you'll kind of notice this theme of him like unwinding and becoming, going from like who he thinks he should be to who he really is.
A hero's journey.
But who are you?
Be warned. So he's making a lot of works at this time in a lot of different mediums. He's making paintings, marble carvings, sculptures. And look up Emile Gauguin marble sculpture. So this is the only sculpture in the 4th Impressionist exhibition, and he makes it in 1879. And it's a sweet little sculpture of his youngest son. And quickly, people notice he's fucking talented. But after this, he very quickly gives
up.
It's just a nice
little bust of his son. It's cute. Super cute.
Right? You want that in your house, though? I mean, just saying.
I mean, I don't, because it might fall over and hurt one of my kids. And also, marble sculptures always kind of creep me out with the white eyes. I don't know. Stop looking at me.
Stop looking at me. I don't want to see you.
Stop being so
conscious. Okay, so, but he's pretty good.
Stop it.
He's pretty good.
But yeah, but you can see, like, who the fuck knows how to sculpt marble? Like, but it's apparently nice. His landlord was teaching him, so he's naturally very good at, like, all things art. And so all this is very romantic, right? I mean, you're making fucking sculpture my kids. But not for Met. She does not get the art thing. And she's like, listen, I have 5 fucking kids I just popped out for you.
Do the Wall Street thing again.
Yeah,
do that Wall Street.
These kids can't be putting up with your broke artist ass. You better make some fucking money, okay? And she's not happy. She packs up the kids and moves them to Copenhagen. Without even telling Paul. Paul does like follow her and tries to make it work and gets a job like selling waterproofing canvas.
Okay.
But he fucking hates it there.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, Met starts getting a job teaching French to children of the prime minister. And she's so ashamed of Paul that when the kids come over for their lesson, she makes him go in the attic.
Wow.
Like,
out of my sight.
Seriously.
So a lot of the rumors will say that he left his wife, but it actually, the truth is that she, with the support of her family, told him to leave.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow. Bye. Dude.
Yeah. So she's like,
You can't sit with us.
You don't even go here.
Yeah. So it is sad. So he gets the fuck out. He goes back to Paris and penniless and not really knowing what to do. But he does have this sense of adventure still. And he hears of this artist colony in Brittany called Pont-Aven. And he's fucking sold. He goes down there and it's like the old Paul with the suit and ties is completely gone. And he's got a new look, which screams Bohemia. So when you see pictures of him, you'll notice he's wearing super funky hats, usually berets. He wears stripy t-shirts that are very stereotypical of Frenchy artists. But he's like mix matching them with nautical jackets, baggy pants.
It sounds like 2010 when you're looking at the city.
It's like, that's actually what it is. It's like steampunk meets indie girl meets
indie artist. Cities.
Yeah.
With an infinity scarf.
You throw a chain with an owl pendant on and he is
running. Oh, he would have lost his chain.
Spinning in so hard to 2007. Oh my God.
Yes.
But he also has a very signature item he always wears. Which are wooden clogs.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, which are very much of a like local style. It sounds very uncomfortable and loud, but to each their own.
Loud, yes. Yeah. How comfortable can that possibly be? Is my question.
It cannot be.
Maybe it gives you good posture. I don't know. That sounds terrible.
I don't know. And I'm sorry, this isn't like offense to any cultures that wear clogs. Like, you got to admit, even if you're from one, that you're only wearing them for like the 30 minutes for the picture and then they're off. I'm telling you.
And then, put them back.
Yeah, keep slippers in your purse.
Yeah. So there's other artists that are there, like rebel bohemian types, because Paul is the most charismatic and the oldest and the most different with his weird, funky style. He gets this weird fan club of just like dude artists following him around. And it would have included artists such as Archibald Standis Hartig and Emile Bernard, who describes Gauguin at the time as being a partier surrounded by a flock of young dudes who just worshipped him. And here we see lots of beautiful impressionistic paintings of scenes throughout Pont-Aven that were very much in a very typical impressionistic style. So if you look up landscape of Pont-Aven in 1888, I mean, it doesn't get more basic bitch than that title, right? Like, okay, you did a landscape and it's a Pont-Aven.
Yeah.
But it's beautiful. Okay. He's got the style down. You can feel it's like hella wavy. But it's not super distinguished at this point, not really. And summer ends, and the fanboy club goes back home to their mommies, and he goes back to Paris. But he quickly gets an itch to leave, and he and his friends, Charles Laval and Juan Uribe, pack up and go to Panama to build the famous Panama Canal.
Oh, that's the thing.
Yeah, that's the thing that they have there.
You go, Paul.
Yeah. Well, so they get there, and Panama Canal at this time was like a French colonization project where the French were basically like, okay, America, we're going to show you how to dig a really big fucking hole, which ironically does not work out because they lose funding and then America takes it over and has to finish the project. But yeah, so.
Oh, my God.
But Paul's having the best fucking time when they get there, and he's really just doing his jack of all trades bullshit. He's playing pool, he's playing mandolin, guitar, boxing, painting, making himself the it guy. But very quickly, this all comes to an end because he gets fired from working on the canal after 2 weeks, catches malaria and dysentery. Jesus, Paul.
Oh no. Oh,
yeah. So him and Charles Laval are fucking sick as fuck. Pooping. Yeah. They're like, we gotta get the fuck out of here. They gather the last of their pennies and go to Martinique. So Martinique is a small island in the Caribbean, and this is where Columbus actually first arrived in 1502. Uh-huh. And Gauguin and Laval arrive almost 400 years later. And they're like, perfect. Nature, huts, we're mysterious Frenchmen. These ladies are going to eat our shit up. Except, wait, we're both really poor and we're shitting ourselves nonstop. So,
yum.
So dysentery is an infection and inflammation of the intestines, which causes diarrhea that may contain blood or mucus. And malaria symptoms include fever and flu-like illness, like shaking, chills, headache, muscle aches, and tiredness. Nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea also may occur. So I'm getting the feeling that they're not exactly in the best shape when they get to Martinique. But they do manage. But they do manage to find an abandoned shack and live on fruits from the trees and fish caught by locals. And they're basically just like taking advantage of the locals, helping them out, and acting like they want to be a part of the culture that wasn't theirs, but they want to be the first to touch it, which they misunderstand as like appreciating it. But it's really just like, no, you're using your privilege over these local peoples who had already suffered at the hands of colonization. And you're really just talking about being a colonizer, you fucking assholes. Like,
With your dick.
So in articles, people are like, well, at least they weren't committing statutory rape yet. And literally, that's like what they said. Like, well, at least they weren't raping them. And I'm like, oh, yeah, if you have that, great. But Gauguin is becoming increasingly unhinged with his, quote, primal sexual desires.
Oh, no. Okay, here we go.
Yeah. And at the at this point, he'd supposedly been faithful to Met for 15 years, but he writes her a letter that basically says he's the epicenter of female desire on the island.
Okay.
He's like, all right. I know.
Oh, my God.
I'm the hottest thing here.
Yeah, everybody loves me. And listen, and the other day, a woman offered me a guava. But then as I was going to eat it, a man stopped me from eating it. And he told me that the woman rubbed it between her boobs and cast a spell on it so that I would fall in love with her and have to take her as my woman. So like,
I'm going to do that.
Likely to.
I'm going to do that.
But I'm thinking his poor malaria dysentery broke ass was probably not readily getting the pussy. So look up landscape on Martinique, and you can see he is still painting an impressionistic style with the small brushstrokes, but the picture plane is flattened, which basically means that it looks hella flat in the background. Yeah, right? And this move, though, it shows he was definitely onto something here. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Bye-bye, illusion of death.
Still a little there we boring. Go.
So these fuckers are living the life of Riley, but Paul's butthole is not getting any better. And the doctors tell him he needs to go home and get some medicine or else he's going to die.
Oh, no.
Yeah, he kind of.
So he goes back to Paris, bringing with him these paintings of, quote, exotic Martinique. And he brings back 14 paintings, two of which catch the eye of a local affluent family in the art world, the Van Goghs. So they buy two paintings, Landscape on Martinique and Among the Mangoes. And this was like a big deal. They were a big like art collecting sort of family. And after this, he goes back to Pont-Aven, still seeking like a more primitive nature-y kind of existence to heal his butthole and get well in a familiar place. And while he's there, he meets Emile Bernard, another artist. And then he meets Emile's younger sister, Madeline. And thus a series of inappropriate relationships. So he immediately falls in love with Madeline, who would have been 17 at the time, but he's married, he's broke, and he's way too fucking old for her.
His butthole gets better.
So he's
okay.
Better.
Just wanted to make sure for the timeline.
His butthole does get better. It's not like, So he and Emile are both considered to be part of the Pont-Aven school, developing a style called cloisonnism, which is basically a big sort of like color blocking out forms and then outlining them in big, bold outlines with less shadowing, less volume. And this is the style where Paul Gauguin starts really like setting himself apart as a post-impressionist painter. So look up the vision after the sermon, and a few big things happen with this painting. This would have been a painting where we really start to see the departure from the impressionist movement into the post-impressionist, which is basically like French dudes who like the impressionist and then take it and make it more abstract and insert a bunch of symbolism into it. And this is what's thought to be Madeline's praying on the left, and Paul is praying on the right. And Paul is like looking down in shame. And in the painting, there is a depiction of an angel wrestling. And the painting refers to the biblical story of Jacob and spent the night wrestling a mysterious angel. The woman who closed her eyes are envisioning the archangel. So they're like picturing this happening. But it's thought that Paul is like dealing with some like wrestling of emotions and internal desire for Madeline at this point.
I see.
It's like inner turmoil sort of deal.
Yeah. Yeah, no, totally. Like, I can't get over this bitch. I just love her so much.
Oh my God.
To wrestling my fucking lust. And he is. My primal lust.
He is fucking tormented by this. And meanwhile, Vinnie Van Gogh is just like blowing him the fuck up. He's obsessed with Paul.
Paul, when are you gonna move in with me?
Paul, just come to our place. Please, please, please. Be my roommate. GTL. Be my best friend. Let's start an artist colony and get together and take over the world. And Paul, tormented and annoyed, concedes and moves in with Vinny. And this is where the drama begins. So Vinny, Vincent Van Gogh, he's talking this place up, and Paul gets there and it's a fucking shit show. There's just dirty dishes, clothes, paint, tobacco ashes, like disgusting bachelor pad. But he's there and he does like Vincent at this point. So he agrees to take up the cooking and the cleaning. And Vinny takes him to his favorite brothel, introduces him to his favorite prostitute, Rachel, who apparently he would just like pay to smile at him.
Oh, that's not weird at all.
Yeah. So just like weird sex things. But this isn't about Van Gogh, so we're going to move on. The buddies are partying, and they're partying hard, and they have three boxes for their expenses in rank of importance. So the third was for rent and utilities, the second for tobacco, and the first for the pussy.
Oh, of course.
You have to have
pussy always takes a
pussy
precedent.
Budget.
Pussy budget. So what starts out as like a goal to create an artist haven quickly just turns into two dudes binge drinking absinthe and getting fucked up way too much all the time, having crazy arguments, until finally the craziest fucking fight happens on Christmas Eve of all days, and Paul decides to leave. Apparently, per his recollection, as he's leaving, he hears footsteps coming up behind him. He turns around and it's Vinny about to attack him with a fucking razor. Vinny's like shocked when Paul turns around. Paul goes to sleep it off at a hotel. Vinny runs away. And when Paul comes back to the house in the morning, the police are surrounding it and Vinny is being taken to the hospital. So this is when the famous incident of Vinny cutting off his ear happens. And everyone kind of thinks they got into like a battle of the wits, a battle of the bulges, like a dick battle. and that Paul won and Vinny couldn't take it. But, and also everybody thinks that he just cut off the lobe.
Nope.
But
the whole ass thing.
Yeah. Like more recently, there was a diagram unearthed from the doctor who helped bandage him up. and it shows a diagram of the ear. He fucking cut off the whole ear except the lobe.
There's like a tiny sliver.
Oh. Yeah, just like he left like a little dingleberry lobe situation. Oh,
dingleberry.
So this is a reminder that the holidays can be stressful. Do not go Van Gogh at Christmas, everybody, okay?
Yeah, we'll definitely do a full episode of, oh, yeah, of course, the man, because yes, he's hella drama. Oh, dude. And go further into the ear situation.
Yeah, the ear. Oh, and then he takes the ear and he gives it to a hooker. Okay. Well,
I was going to say, what happened to Rachel? The ear? Like, where did it go?
He gave it to Rachel.
Yeah.
Who may or may not.
If anybody finds,
did she eat it?
if anybody has a strange ear
in your grandma's basement, go ahead and just give it to us. Just DM us.
We'll figure it out.
Well, like kind of off topic, there's like literally this place in something in the Yukon up in Canada where you can drink a shot that has a preserved mummified human toe.
If that exists,
then like they might have done weird shit with the ear, because this is just human nature.
This is
right?
Victorian times. They were drinking mummy juice and like like their mummy juice at this time for some reason.
Something they probably did some fucked up shit with it, but you know, just speculating. Shooting in the dark. Anyway, go Gong.
So Paul can't take this. It's not his jam to stay around when things get serious. And so he goes back to Pont-Aven. And when he gets there, Madeline is like married to some young French dude. So look up Yellow Christ 1888. And this is
sounds
like
promising.
This might be my favorite fucking painting that he does, because it's just so fucking ridiculous, the meaning behind it. So this painting is a symbolic key.
<I'm> sorry.
Jesus is not very hot in this.
Oh
one.
My god, no.
So
this looks like when you know, like when you Simpsonify people, like that's a thing you can do.
I have one of those at my house of my family.
Aww.
It's cute.
So
but,
the pain-
okay. Oh,
yeah,
god.
It does, right? So this painting is a symbolic piece that shows the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, and it takes place in northern France, and Breton women are gathered in prayer, and it's thought that Madeline is the lady on the left, and Paul is actually representing himself as fucking Jesus. Because he feels so badly for himself.
Wow.
He feels like he is the most betrayed.
Babe.
And
wow.
Which I just think is like ridiculous. So yeah. Right. And this is of course in it his like iconic like right. It yeah, does look like
it. It's his face.
It's his face. And so this is more his iconic style. It's all there. The heavy outline, the yellow, red, green reduced color palette. It's really, I feel like, iconic Paul Gauguin. And he also just feels like he's so misunderstood and so betrayed by society.
I'm so betrayed that I'm crucified. You're crucified. Yeah. Stop crucifying me.
Yeah. And so of course he puts himself as Jesus, which is like, dude, but Jesus was like not being a total dick trying to fuck 17-year-old. So
yeah. He seemed a little nicer than that.
Man, go game.
Yeah. Okay. So he has a full-blown midlife crisis at this point. But we do start seeing a lot of blatant symbolism in the work. Fruit always indicates his sexual desire and temptation. There's foxes that indicate his inner demons. There's snakes. There's always paintings of him like putting his finger in his mouth like this. And it's like really grosses me out seeing them. It makes my vagina crawling on itself. And he's so he's always fighting in these festering sexual desire that he has for these young women. And he has a serial amount of affairs, and he even manages to get like a young seamstress pregnant. And so he's not hiding himself anymore. The real Paul is coming out.
On display.
In the sheet. And yeah, so his buddy Emil is like, dude, forget about my sister. You need to get away. Go back to the adventure hall.
And get the fuck away from my sister.
Yeah, and get the fuck away from my sister. Yeah. So Emil suggests Tahiti. And our poly boy is off again.
Sounds nice.
Yeah. So at this point, he's 43 years old when he goes to Tahiti. And when he gets there, his hair has grown really long from the trip. And in Polynesian culture, there has always pretty much been this idea of like a third gender called a mahu. And so they thought that Paul may have essentially been like trans when he gets there because... Yeah, because he's wearing these wooden shoes. He's got this funky long hair.
Different.
Like, not exactly masculine, not exactly feminine, like somewhere in between. But these people are like treated with respect there. It's not looked at as like a bad thing. And they do show up in his paintings here. And he keeps thinking, I'm going to be the original colonizer or some shit.
Oh, no.
And he will find the virgin place. But at this point, most places in the world had already been reached by colonizers. Papeete and Tahiti, in Tahiti, is no different. But he does have the foresight to think, like, maybe if I paint this place here, people in France will think it's exotic and think it's untapped, and I can paint these and send them back and they'll like them. Right. And they'll think they're like, you know, different.
Wow.
Yeah. Like place. They'll be impressed because they've never seen something like this before, maybe. So, yeah. And maybe they'll understand me and maybe they'll praise me for showing them the world. But, and his behavior is becoming more and more unhinged. He immediately finds the prostitution rings in town and takes advantage of that.
Mm.
And then he goes into the local village. Right. Oh, Paul. So then he goes into the local village and tells people he wants a partner. And out of a local woman's hut pops out Tara Manha. And she would have been 13 years old.
Oh, no. That's
No.
Yeah. No. So, not cool, Paul.
That's a child. Yeah. That's a little child.
That is a little child. So, I mean, we're graduating here in the offensiveness of these crimes, for sure. And apparently their first conversation would have gone a little something like this. Are you afraid of me? No. Will you live in my hut for good? Yes. Have you ever been ill? No. And that was it for them. So look up Merahi Metua no Tehamana.
Okay. That's a child.
Yeah. So that's his child bride.
Oh, no. And a little girl.
That's a little girl. She's in her best Sunday dress. And
she looks scared.
Yeah. And she's definitely grimacing. For sure.
Yeah, she's not happy about this. She's not happy.
Yeah, she does not look happy. So he starts painting and sculpting local women, but he's also making shit up too from other cultures in like India. So if you look in the back, there's like hieroglyphics, and those are just like of his own invention. So he's basically like,
let's make this look
exotic. It's like Georgia O'Keeffe, right? Like, oh, let me make it look like islandy and islandery. Oh, and I'll put a hieroglyph there and a brown lady here, and presto, I have myself some exotic ass culture.
That's really embarrassing, Paul.
So fucked, right? And it's definitely an ego thing. He's not just making the work to make work. He wants people to see him. He wants to get famous, and he wants them to give him lots of money. So he's definitely trying to cultivate that certain type of look. So after he makes a bunch of work and completely ruins the childhood of Tara Manha, he decides to go back to Paris in quest for fame and thinks there really is no reason to ever come back to his child bride, who also has a child.
No.
Oh,
no,
my
no.
God. Oh.
Man, why'd you have to knock her up, dude? Come on.
Dude. And so they never see each other again, apparently. And she's devastated.
That's a good thing. I don't know.
I think so.
It's probably fine. Yeah. She'll be fine.
But the best part about this is he goes all the way back to fucking Paris, and people are like, dude, you're making this shit up. There's no fucking way. This is bullshit. No. They do not like the
picture.
Painting.
It didn't happen.
Yeah, they're like, no. Okay, Rachel Dolezal, like, get the fuck out of here with these bullshit ass paintings. So And he's totally pissed because people are still not hopping on the Gauguin train. But he also still has this little tribe of Bohemia, and that and keeps proving to us anytime we think he may not be able to get crazy enough, he goes one fucking step further. So he moves into a little studio and paints the inside of the house and the studio completely fucking yellow. Even the windows.
Yellow.
Like, even the windows he paints yellow. The walls.
Do your thing, I guess.
The trim, yellow's the my thing, so I'm going to make everything yellow. Because that's my whole personality. That's my color.
Yellow.
My personality is yellow. It's a happy color. And I feel like this is definitely, like, a Vinnie Van Gogh sort of influence. I feel like when I think of Vincent Van Gogh, it's, like, blue and yellow. No?
Yellow totally. Cafe.
Yellow. Yeah. Like, there's lots of really good yellows. So when this happens, he also meets Anna the Javanese, and she was, quote, passed on to Gauguin. And so they thought she was Malaysian, but she actually may have been Sinhalese. So we don't know too much about her actual past, but she was 13 too.
What is it with these tiny girls? Oh my God.
No, child.
So lots of sex with 13-year-olds happening. Look up Aita Tamari. This will be easier. Anna, the Javanese woman.
Okay.
Yeah. So
I feel weird looking at it.
I know. I cannot. Yeah. We're going to get into that at the end. But so.
Yeah, I don't want to look at it.
I don't want to look at it anymore. Is this illegal? I don't want it in my algorithm.
Totally. So, I'm like, please don't be looking at my search history.
So this painting, we can see Anna, and it's thought that it may be a callback to Manet's Olympia.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The pose is really similar. The
Olympia was a woman.
Well, the pose and the way it's done, and the biggest thing is the sexual impropriety and the societal shame cast on these men for their desires.
I'm looking at a picture, like her actual picture now. It's,
yeah,
and it's little.
It's sad because she looks like what do they call it? Like a child, an adult child, you know? Like
totally,
like
she's trying to be womanly. Dude.
I don't even know. I think it's just like she looks like she's seen a thing or two, you know?
Oh, yeah. She's seen some stuff, this bitch.
Yeah. So Anna was a total badass, though. And she would have been like really unmissable in the streets of Paris and Pont-Aven due to her skin color and the fact that she's like a child hanging out with gross old dudes. But she also had a pet monkey and like loved to stick her tongue out at people. I think it's funny. Right. But she's a total badass. So Paul one day gets in this huge, like, brawl in Pont-Aven with a group of kids, and they kick him with their wooden clogs and shatter his
ankle. Yes. Oh, no. I'm for it.
Like, their dads and stuff. But, yeah, so he can't walk, and he's recovering. And when he's recovering, she steals all of his shit except for his
paintings.
And she's like, dude, fuck you. Champagne stuff. I just want your money.
There you go.
And then she like gets the fuck out. So yeah, good there for you, go. Anna.
Okay.
Respect.
Good, good, good. Yes.
So, respect for
fucking
Anna.
Ray. Ray's giving me a hard time. So Paul again is penniless, bedridden, and running out of options. And good. He decides to go. Yeah. And he decides to go back to Tahiti, and when he gets there, he is sorely disappointed because it's even more colonized. There's electricity, technological advances, and his child bride had found another one to love.
Well,
good for her.
Yeah.
Oh, and did I not mention that he has huge festering open sores on his legs when he gets there?
Oh my God, why? Yeah. How?
So guess what? They're
syphilis.
Syphilis.
Our favorite thing.
Yeah, than our favorite sexually transmitted disease on this show.
I'm really more of a chlamydia person, but to each his own.
It's just so weird that this show is getting like oddly themed around syphilis.
There's so much of it.
Wait, is syphilis the one where your face starts to fall off, or am I thinking about?
Oh my God,
else?
there's so many.
Yeah,
things.
Your skin will start, your nose will start falling off. You'll get gross.
Okay, that's the one.
Things, and then your brain starts to go a little bit.
Yeah,
organs are affected. Oh, yeah.
What's the state of his asshole at this current time?
So his butthole seems to be good, but the syphilis is starting to like take over his brain and also infect his skin, so it's in the later stages and he's getting a little losing his mind sort of deal. And so this is a reminder, because we always have to remind with the syphilis, go get tested. It's treatable.
Syphilis,
it's
curable, is still out there
even in the later stages.
You'll be fine.
You're gonna be okay.
No judgment.
So Holly had been fucking lots and lots of ladies, brothel ladies, wife ladies, underage children, and syphilis was just rampant at the time. So, of course, his horrible dumbass brings it to Tahiti, and it's something he infected a lot of local women.
Oh, no. What a douche.
On.
Like, I mean, there's no liking this guy.
Well, you're fully, at that point, they're fully aware where syphilis comes from and how it spreads around. Not like it's a mysterious, like in the dark
ages.
He
actually thought, though, because it wasn't showing up in other ways, like he thought that he had eczema. He's like, it's just eczema. He's just like wishful thinking, though. Probably.
Yeah, no, it's
eczema. Nice try, Paul.
Even though I'm fucking all of these.
Don't mind my eczema, lady. Just don't worry about it. Just get on
the
dick.
It's a little rash. It's a rash. It's no big deal.
Don't worry about it.
Rash. It's from my laundry detergent.
I'm just a sensitive skin girl.
Just allergic. No, yeah.
One info.
People have herpes.
One info.
Just so you know. Before you blow.
One info.
Did you guys come up with that?
Yeah, we had our.
Oh, that's all Chelsea.
It was so good.
That's my PSA for a little song just before you blow.
I'm gonna have to have you sing that to the kids when the age changes.
Okay, guys, gather around.
Okay, so he's taking morphine to alleviate the pain. He's in the later stages of syphilis, but that still doesn't stop him from getting yet another child bride. Another. So he meets Paola when she was 13. They get married, and it's thought that he actually really did love her. And she's the one that we see in, like, a shit ton of work. So she gets pregnant with their first child. But the child is due on Christmas. And we, as we now know, that's really not Paul's holiday.
No.
For an earful of reason. So the baby was born in 1896, a little girl who died soon thereafter.
Oh.
No. So if you look up Nevermore, this is a painting showing a grieving Paola with eyes full of sadness, and it's written in Tahitian. It reads Nevermore, which is a poem by Edgar Allan Poe, and it's about a man who's lost his beloved and an ugly blackbird that refuses to leave, and anytime he asks him a question, he says Nevermore. So, yeah, so sad. It is sad, okay?
Yeah.
But I'm more sad for her than I am for him.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then a few months later, his daughter from Met actually dies too.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so lots of the children dying. So sad. She does get pregnant again, though, after she loses the baby. But in true Paul fashion, he leaves. He's like, this is too much for me. And he goes to a nearby island. And he at this point, he's not doing too well. He decides he's going to unalive himself. So he packs a bag full of arsenic and sets off on a hike up a hill. And when he gets to the top, he takes the arsenic and he vomits all of it up and just lays there for a full day. and manages to hobble his dumbass back down the hill the next day. So
yeah, that's
nice
like,
try.
I wouldn't do it that way, I feel.
No. Maybe he should just cut his dick off. That probably would have worked a little bit faster.
I mean, yeah. So he does do a few funny things after this. He moves back to Tahiti and becomes a printmaker for a local newspaper. And then decides in his syphilatic mind to start his own newspaper called The Smile. Where he just posts like a bunch of shit to piss people off. And
okay, so he's a troll.
Mm-hmm. And so he moves to a remote Marquesan island called Hiva'oa that is really only populated by locals and one church with a very severe bishop who like controls all the land there. And to convince the bishop to sell him some land, he starts going to church. But then the bishop sells him the land. And the very next day, he carves a sculpture of the bishop as the devil. Oh, and he never goes back to church again.
Yeah, Okay, I like that.
Yeah, that's
one. Okay, go again.
When he starts to lose his mind, he does funny things. He gets a dog and he names it Pigo, which means penis.
Okay. Accurate. Sound. On brand.
Okay, so I'm done with Gauguin now.
Yeah, and when nuns go by, he loves to shout Pigo, Pigo, so that they can hear him shouting penis, which is funny. He puts a huge sign outside of his house that says Madison de Jour, which means house of pleasure. Or house of orgasms.
Okay.
And some
in case you were wondering.
Okay. In case you were wondering. And he does paint pornographic paintings, and he loves showing them to local women. Because
he's a predator.
Because he's a predator.
That sounds very predatory.
Yeah. And the last funny thing, he found a new teenage vagina, a redheaded Polynesian. Who he also may have gotten pregnant. So he continues to do morphine and become the reclusive eccentric man who loses his mind in a hut on a little hill. And by the time he's at the end of his life, he's in an immense amount of pain. He can't walk. So needless to say, he dies May 8th, 1903 from a syphilitic heart attack. He would have been 54 years old.
Oof, he's so, still that's pretty young. Jeez.
Wow,
go
get
him. I mean, pretty old for then, but
I don't know. I mean, we're like talking like late 19th century, early 20th, so people are living longer, but I think they're still dying a lot because there's so many pandemics disease. And so much syphilis.
Yeah. Oh man.
Lots of syphilis. And I mean, his legacy is questionable, right? I mean, this guy is super fucking famous and his art is beautiful, but I just can't stomach it knowing what I know now.
Yeah.
That these are all children. Difficult. And I feel like he tries to make them look older than they are. By giving them like curvier bodies and making them look, you know, but it's still like we can appreciate
you can tell, though.
And some of them and others, I'm like, oh no, that's like a woman. Like I thought it was like a woman.
Mm.
So yes, I think we can appreciate like the impact that he makes to art. But if your stomach doesn't curl up like a little bit knowing what you know now, I'm judging you. Like, I'm judging you.
Totes.
Totes. Right? I'm with you. Mm.
And so in 2017, one of his paintings sold for $300 million.
Who bought it?
Yeah.
Private collector.
Yeah.
And then one thing that's really cool is Kehinde Wiley, who is a artist of today, if you guys don't know.
He's the fucking guy.
Yeah, he's pretty legit.
Yeah, and he's done a recent work in 2019 called Tahiti. And this is a quote from his website. I am interested in transformation and artifice. My newest exhibition will engage with the history of France and its outward facing relationship to black and brown bodies, specifically relating to sexual proclivity. Gauguin features heavily in the imagination of France and her global interface With that comes an entire history of complicated gazing. I interrogate, subsume, and participate in the discourse about Mahu, about friends, and about the invention of gender. So remember when we were talking about the third gender?
Oh, yeah.
So this is actually him, like, presenting. And he does this across a lot of cultures of, like, taking that sort of the classical portraiture that's done of these, like, white kings and kings and makes that gives the power back to persons of color and marginalized groups in these, like, awesome empowering paintings. So yeah, they're really dope.
They're just overall really fucking good paintings.
I mean, they're like fucking, he's the guy, right?
He's the one that did the Obama portrait and Michelle portrait.
Yeah.
Big fucking deal. These paintings are better than Gauguin's.
Oh, for sure. I get it with Gauguin, but, like, I don't really like the work. I'm not going to lie. I was not the most, like, excited by
it's the like work. On top of you being, you know, it's like if you're talking about Impressionism, it's Manet, it's Pissarro, it's Cézanne. And then Gauguin is like, okay, that, but make it creepy.
Right.
Was he one of those Fauves guys?
Fauvist. Like he's a Fauve. Yeah. He's considered a early Fauvist too. Unnatural colors. But it's like it's similar to the whole vibe of Impressionism, but with these kind of brighter, more vibrant colors too. And then if you check out Matisse is one of the Fauvist guys, but his is better.
Yeah,
Matisse is better.
I can agree.
I mean, listen, like, the thing is, like, that's conflicting for me is that I so hold back from being like, look at these hot ladies. And because they're not grown women, knowing that now. Yeah. But if you take away my knowledge of what I know now, that's my initial thought is like, wow, these women are beautiful, you know, in these beautiful paintings. Like, I do see the intrigue and glorifying
hot male gaze.
Glorifying ladies. These women. The problem is that they're not women, they're children.
Yeah.
And you can't go back once you know that. So
when
thinking of the person at the party, it was pretty fucking
crazy. Yeah, give it to me.
Jeffrey Epstein, Angela.
Yeah.
I mean, Jeff Epstein is a disgusting excuse for a human being. And apparently he's always been this way, according to his sisters. Huge financial success to the point of, like, buying a fucking island.
Because of the blackmail.
Right. That conquering sort of questy vibe. And just committing sex acts against children with a bunch of other famous people visiting him and knowing about it. The whole thing's really fucking gross. And I think if Paul Gauguin had been living in 2024.
He'd go to the island.
He'd go to the island.
He'd be at Epstein Island. He'd be on, for
sure. He'd be on the list of people.
He's on the list.
Yeah.
So I feel like he would have been proud of it, though. He would have owned it.
I know. Yeah, exactly.
I conquered these young chicks. Oh, my God. So, we're going to go shower
after this. You're not even conquering.
Long, cold shower.
I need a shower, too. It was like, and I mean, so Paul Gauguin, you know.
Okay.
Fuck you, dude.
A little sad now.
Damn. But, this is a good one.
Yeah.
I learned a lot. Yeah. I do. At least we have the latter time of his life of the dog name, the dog. The penis dog.
Penis dog is funny.
Huge fan of that. Yelling out penis. That's fun.
Yeah, the tricking the bishop is funny.
Yeah, the bishop devil, that's fun. Okay.
He does do funny things like that, but obviously we can't touch on everything. But yeah, so that's Paul.
Oh.
That's Paul. So Angela.
O-E-G.
I have to ask. I feel like we're going to ask anybody who joins this, if you had a episode title for Baroque Bitches, what would it be and why?
Your housewife tagline.
What's your tagline?
When I found out that you guys were doing Thickness is My Sickness, I about died. I may have co-opted that from Chelsea after she told me the story of that so long
we can ago. We can God. Do thickness is my sickness too.
Yeah,
why
not?
Part I feel two. Like yeah, there's got to be more like fat girl representation,
right?
It's awesome.
But yeah, well, we're so happy that you came on the show. And
thank you for having me. This is fun. I learned a lot.
Oh, good. And we hope you'll come back again.
Do you want to shout out anything about you for our listeners? Because they're in love now.
They're in love, they're obviously. In love. They need to know.
Well, obviously, you guys are fucking amazing. I want to shout out to all my bungholes that I know are listening. And even if you're not, like, you know, here I am shouting your name into the void.
Do you want to Spencer, promote the you're restaurant? A bitch.
Oh, yeah. I work at Itria in San Francisco. We're right on 24th Street by the 24th BART Plaza. So it's a, you know, if you're willing to brave the elements of
the mission,
some of the craziest stuff that happens on the mission, you'll be delightfully rewarded with handmade pastas and delicious crudos.
And your like, artwork
really
is
awesome. Oh yeah, my artwork is on the wall.
Yeah.
It's pretty surreal.
Come on.
To like look at it. I'm like, oh shit.
That's
the shit. Go check out her Instagram too. It's Dolores Taze. We're gonna tag her on our Instagram. Baroque.b. Podcast.
Check out our website, baroquebpodcast.com.
Go leave us some merch. Stars, please. We love the stars.
I'm
merch.
Not going to buy a merch until you come out with a thong.
Okay.
So sign me up.
Yeah, I want to writing it down. Writing it down.
Stars, reviews, please, 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 please.
We love hearing your comments and DMs.
It keeps us
and
going.
Reviews and all the things because we can
follow them on Patreon
and join be a patron.
One of us. We love you.
We love you.
Love you. Me.
Love you.
Bye.
Bye.